Welcome back here to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Thank you so much. All the texters are like, you just keep continuing to read from Sebastian Bach's book. It's a real classic radio. It really is. I think we're on to something. It finally, it took years, but I think we found our breakout hit. Maybe it's something the Neo-Futurists could look into to replace Too Much Light. Last week, news broke that the Neo-Futurist Theater Company no longer had the license to perform Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind for 2017. The late-night show that attempted to perform 30 plays in 60 minutes is owned by founding director Greg Allen. Allen chose to end the agreement and in a statement said he wanted to start anew with a new cast and company and use the show to take on fascism, take on Donald Trump. The show was the longest-running late-night theater in Chicago history, dating back to 1988. In that time, the Neo-Futurists did something that so many other companies tried to replicate. They became a viral sensation. Yep, live theater that just had to be seen. A rites of passage, a Chicago tradition. It's hard to think of Chicago without Too Much Light. It's a show that introduced thousands to the theater. Diverse social views. And, well, to a community of like-minded young people that were all trying to make Chicago home. And the amount of talent that's come through those doors, it's astounding. So many great, respected professionals that took their job seriously and inspired so many people to be creative, follow their dreams, and, well, do something. I have three of those people in studio tonight. Dave Aull, Phil Ritterelli, and Rachel Claff. Phil Ritterelli was one of the first ensemble members back in the late 80s to do Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind. And you've That's been right. in and out for years. And mm-hmm. Was it last year you were still doing the show?
Yeah, I was active as recently as last year doing Too Much Light. Back in the day, I would do Too Much Light and then a primetime show before that. These days, I'm like, you know what? Just one or the other. So the last thing I did was Trust Us, Screw You with Dan Kerr-Hobert, our show about confidence men.
And, all right. And joining shortly thereafter, after Phil started in 1988, is our next panelist, Dave Aull. Dave, I mean, you were there for over a decade. I mean, essentially the 90s you were at Neo-Futurist. And really
right.
the shows that I saw, that was you. You were
Yeah,
you
I was
center.
Like the Chandler Bing of Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind. I was just around for the 90s and then kind of disappeared. So.
And also joining us, Rachel Clash. She came to the company in the mid-90s and she is still active. She produces the show It Came from the Neo-Futurarium at the Neo-Futurist. Rachel, great to see you again.
You too.
You're just in here.
Yes.
You know, this has been such... I told my audience this earlier that, you know, I spent the last 2 days really getting deep in the Sebastian Bach book, but it was whenever I had to take a break, I came up for air to read stories about this the end of Too Much Light. For you guys, I mean, to be part of this show that was on stage for 30 years, talk about the emotion that's you're going through this week as this is all unfolding in public.
It's been a roller coaster. I got to be honest with you. You know, we're not all together the way we used to be because of the show. So we've been sharing memories and feelings online together in face-to-face when we can. I'll tell you what. So December is traditionally the anniversary shows, the best of shows, when the Neos do a retrospective of all their favorite and more popular and topical plays from the year. So last Friday, so the news broke, middle of last week,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And then Friday, the turnout to that show was really overwhelming. I'm not talking about the line was around the block and there were people out there at like 9 o'clock and that was great. But the Neos from past years who showed up, it was the first and really only opportunity we had to show our support for the active ensemble member. And they were all there, as well as John Pearson and Lisa Biscani, who are alums who had performed throughout this year.
Yeah.
So it was a huge celebration, and I've never seen a standing ovation before the show.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
You know, I saw the show this past weekend, Sunday night, and I've been seeing the show since 1989, early in 89, the very first year. So I have 28 years of Too Much Light watching, sometimes as a cast member, but actually more amount of time not. And I will say that I think this current iteration of the cast is really strong. I was really impressed. There were a number of people who I had not seen perform before, and they unleashed a brand of nonlinear, irrational comic insanity that I was just really proud that this is where, you know, Too Much Light Chicago ended up. So here's my metaphor for what the last week or so has been like emotionally. The Chicago neo-futurists have basically been living with an unexploded bomb in our front yard for 28 years. And we always knew that this thing could go off. We always knew that this thing could happen, that a certain someone could decide that he didn't want to play with the group anymore and he was going to take his bat and his ball and go blah, blah, blah. So on some level, there was some preparation for it, but you're never really prepared for an explosion like that. But what comes after all the turmoil and the blood and the screaming and the helicopters and the sirens and everything else that we went through when the news broke is gradually this feeling of kind of relief, because the thing that's been hanging over your head all this time has happened, and now you're living in the post-apocalyptic reality, and you know, you get to kind of create the new world. So what I want to say to, you know, everyone out there in Radio Land who's been reading that Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind is closing, well, that's true, but what you got to know is the neo-futurists, this amazingly strong lineup, they're still going to be there at the Neo-Futurarium Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights in the same time slots. And some little things are going to change. The title of the show is going to change. They may have to make some changes to the structure. But you're still going to see that same brilliant cast performing short neo-futurist plays, same writer-performers you love, same mix of poetry and comedy and surrealism and politics. So, you know what? It's still there. It's just going to be a different name.
Rachel, there is something to be said about, you know, you could take the words away. I mean, you could take the names away from these shows, but it's a spirit that moves a theater company. Your experience over the last week of dealing with this this news.
No, that's pretty accurate. I mean, what's interesting is that, you know, what's come out of it for me, same as Phil, is just that remembering the community part of it that has been so powerful. I mean, I always sort of said in my tenure with the Near Futurist that it's like being married to about 18 people. You frequently want to murder them, but you also love them and you have their back no matter what. And I think that came back in full force this week. And I've talked to people who I haven't talked to in a while. I've talked to, you know, my best friends who came out of the ensemble, you know, and it's just the outpouring. Like Phil said, going to the show on Friday night and seeing the love in that room was astonishing. And seeing the enthusiasm with which the current cast embrace this challenge is really, I don't fear for them at all. They are going to be just fine because the show was and is as strong as the people performing it. It always has been.
We've been hearing from, obviously, we have an opportunity for ensemble members to get back in touch and reminisce and check in and how you're doing and support each other. But I've been hearing from people who are my friends now who were audience members for decades.
Yes.
Coming for decades and decades. And the same is true of people who come now to see the folks in the active ensemble. You don't come to see the clothesline. You don't come to see the things that the darkroom time or whatever it is.
The dice.
You're coming because, you know, it's affordable, sure, but you're coming because you relate to what the people are saying on stage.
That's
it's an
and the overall experience. Right?
Yeah.
Or what I always say is, you might come the first time because you heard, oh, they roll dice for what you pay, and they have this clothesline.
Yeah.
That's why you come the first time. But we had people all through the 90s, and it's true, the people who show up every week, and they're there in the front row, and they just love this show. And those people are only coming back again and again because the writing is so strong.
Well, let's do this.
They become your friends.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break and let's start at the beginning. I want to talk about, you know, your recollections of starting as a neo-futurist in the ensemble on the show, and also take us through what the show was setting out to do and if it accomplished it. Phil Ritterelli, Dave All, Rachel Claff in studio talking about Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind, the longest running late night theater show in Chicago, which is closing on December 31st, 2016. We'll continue the conversation here on The Download right after the break. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, three members, past and present, of the Neo-Futurist and cast members of Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind, a show which is surprise! I mean, it's shocking to see it on the front page of the Sun-Times. It really is, and we've known each other for a long time. But, I mean, you think of all the shows that you've done that have just been groundbreaking for the city, you know, for the lines around the corner at the Neo-Futurist in Andersonville, and the end of it, is what, you know, gets up on the front page of the, that's how it works, right? Phil Ritterelli, Dave All, and Rachel Claff in studio. So I'm fascinated, guys. Phil, let's start here. You know, talk about the first ensemble. Like, what is Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind?
It is an ever-changing attempt to perform 30 plays in 60 minutes. And the plays, the thing about the plays is they're not, and I, you know, you've got kind of constantly remind people it's not improv. It's not, you know, there are elements of spontaneity, you know, in the show, but they're scripted pieces in which the performers and the background of the performers are, you know, writers, improvisers, musicians, directors, playwrights, poets.
Poets, yeah.
I got it. I had to look around the table. But that they don't play characters and they don't pretend to be. There's no illusion. You know, there's no fourth wall. We're all in the room together trying to accomplish these specific tasks.
And they're not skits either, right. Or sketches. They're
Rachel,
plays.
The experience we kind of talked about, the kind of throughout the thing about the dice and the name tags, but mm-hmm. there really is... beyond just what's on stage, there's an experience that's sort of displayed at the Neo-Futurarium.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because one of the things I've heard over and over, and in fact it became sort of an internet, before there were memes, I think it was a meme, that oh, you know you're a Chicagoan when you see Too Much Light and you think, I could do that. And it kind of became this thing of, you look at it and you go, that doesn't look that hard. You just get up there and talk. But it is hard, and I think everybody will here at the stable will back me up. It is really intense, and you know, our week would look like you'd go in and on Tuesday, you would have written content, you pitch your content, everybody goes around the table, votes for the plays they want to put in the show. We then rehearse for, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours tops.
Because there's new material at the end at the end of the show. You roll a dice and whatever number comes out.
On Friday and Saturday evening, sum of those two rolls is how many new plays go in.
That's right. So anywhere, we rehearse on Tuesdays, and then you'd be on the honor system until Friday to learn your lines, get your props, get ready. And then we'd have about an hour, I think an hour and a half or 2 hours before the show went up, and you'd go. And the show was at 11:30 at night.
So much discipline that goes into that. And I think about this being a theater company, especially in the early days, Dave. I mean, the idea that there's no money going around. This is what you're doing at night. I mean, you really are dedicating yourself to this craft and coming up with new material every single week.
I have to say, Fridays are grueling if you're in the Neo-Futurarium. Like in the early 90s, I had my first job as a professional copywriter at the Sears catalog. And, you know, I'd have to be there at like 8 a.m. and, you know, work this day and then, you know, take the bus back into the city and try to get, you know, what we called in those days a disco nap, but also learn my lines and do all this stuff so I could be at the theater by 9:30, rush through rehearsals, and then, you know, do the show that gets over at 1 or 1:30 in the morning, you know, get home about 2, maybe get to sleep about 4 a.m., and that, you know, trying to do that at the same time that you were working a regular job where you had to be, you know, at work at 8 or 9 in the morning, it was a killer. And sometimes, as Phil was alluding, we would do primetime shows too. So you'd go from your job to the theater and do a show at 8 o'clock and then do Too Much Light at midnight. Stamina, boy.
But here's the thing is, what was always the constant was that you were always writing. And nowadays, because the people in the show come from so many different disciplines, they're choreographing something. You've got to learn choreography, and you've got to learn a song, and you've got to learn your monologue, and you've got to write these things. So you're writing things about what's going on in current events, what's affecting me personally. You know, I'm telling you.
Is it different for you? I mean, from 1989 to being in the cast last year, I mean, is there a difference to the show that you perform in?
The people. I mean,
I'd say there's a difference almost every year.
Yeah, I mean, the subject matter, the way the subject matter is approached.
Mm-hmm. The musical reference points. Boy, generationally, you see new generations come in and there's a new kind. Because, you know, one of the perks of being in the show is you get to work your music into the plays.
Yeah, right.
It's also, I mean, it's gotten, there were again, clowns and filmmakers and poets involved. So it's I think it's a little bit more abstract than it had been in the past, yeah. Which is fantastic. It's fantastic to see.
We're talking about the longest late night running theater show in Chicago, Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind, which is ending I mean, in this way that as you said, Dave, I mean, you kind of knew there was a ticking time bomb on the front lawn. There's strife. We're not going to get into the strife around this, but it's ending in a way that isn't necessarily fitting for what the show did for Chicago for 30 years. It's just kind of like, boom.
You know what I want to say, at least for the Doctor Who fans out there, the show isn't dying, it's regenerating.
Yeah,
it's
exactly
going to have perfect. A new face, but it's going to be the same old thing with a slightly different appearance.
Well, here's what we'll do. Let's take a quick break and we'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. We'll talk more. I want to get at the counterculture part of this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really thought at the time when I saw the show 1993, that I was like, this is nobody's talking about the issues that are in these plays. Nobody's talking about the I mean, it's very eye-opening kind of experience to be in a theater in Chicago being like, wow, this is real. I want to talk about that. And I also want to hear, we can actually do a play. You guys want to do a play?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Rachel Claff, Dave Aul, Phil Ritterelli in studio. We're talking Too Much Light here on The Download tonight. Stay with us. Thank you, Rob. 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's The Download with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at 9 o'clock, we are going to talk with Frank and Trace from Mystery Science Theater 3000, the Comedy Central sci-fi program, which was all through the 90s. Both those guys, they play big roles in the show. They are riffing on live movies at the Logan Theater tomorrow night. So they are going to be in studio to talk about
it. I know where I'll be.
Phil Ritterelli, Dave Aul, and Rachel Claff in studio this hour as we talk about the show Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind, which is ending after being the longest-running late-night show in Chicago history. It is ending December 31st after essentially a licensing dispute. The founding director is pulling the licensing, deciding to start fresh. And it's really brought up a lot of emotion, not just with the neo-futurists, but with the theater community and I think audiences at large who a lot of our – I mean, Anna DeVellantes and I were talking about how she went when she was in high school. I remember being one of the first things I did when I went to Columbia College was come up and see – Pete Zimmerman was saying the same thing when he was in college. So, I mean, there's just this connection to the show. Talk about that. Talk about that. There are so many young people because truly Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind – it's something that young people can do.
Yep,
absolutely. And I think the other thing that really strikes me is how democratic maybe is the right word for the show, but it's also for the audience. I think we often sort of talked about that atmosphere that happens during the show, that you walk in and you feel like all the rules have gone out the window because it's not like any show you're ever going to see. And right away, you're thrown into sort of chaos with, you roll a die to pay for them. It's random. You pay for your ticket, with the roll of a die. You then are go in and somebody's sitting there with headphones on and sunglasses listening to music and says, "Hi, what's your name?" And whatever they hear you say or think they hear you say, they put on a name tag. You slap on a name tag and you go inside and already you're going, "What is this?" And people are, shouting and talking and the cast is right there talking to you. And I think it is really immediate and exciting. I think the mission statement even says, it's a fusion of sport, poetry, and live newspaper.
And it does. I think, as we were kind of talking in the break, just this idea of so many people have probably said throughout their time, I'm not really much in the theater, but you guys I like. I mean, there's something right. about yep. what turning the whole concept, turning the whole concept of a theatrical experience on its
yeah.
head.
Yeah, it's random. It's participatory. The house lights don't go down. You don't get to disappear as an audience member. You got to be active and engaged for an hour. And as it turns out, people like that. And like I said, you're revealing the performers are revealing themselves. It's not that you're going to see All My Sons for 3 right, hours right. to come away with one theme. You've actually learning. There are 30 different ideas that are all squeezed together in this 60 minutes.
Now, Dave, I mentioned right before the break, I mean, one of the things that I really enjoyed about countless times that I've seen Too Much Light has been the political and social POV. I mean, there's something special about not only you know, turning theater experience on its head, but then also having strong points of view and really challenging the status quo and doing so in a way that's just smart and creative. There's just something about the issues that are happening in our society done by the neo-futurists.
Yeah, I might shock you right now when I say when I moved to Chicago, my plan was to do stand-up.
Really?
And I went to the comedy clubs downtown, and it was just not the right era in comedy for me because I saw a lot of homophobic stuff, a lot of sexist stuff. It was the heyday of like Sam Kinison and Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah.
And I don't see myself fitting in here. And then I went and saw the neo-futurists because my good college friend Lisa Biscani had gotten cast and she kind of ordered me to come see her in the show. And it blew me away because they were feminist, they were progressive, they were, you know, challenging, you know, militarism. They were
Play form. That's what, like in right. short plays.
Yeah,
that's what was so brilliant about.
I connect with these people. Plus, it was that mix of the comedy and the poetry and the politics and the personal revelation. And just, you know, like you were talking about before, people look at that and you immediately get it and go, oh, I want to do that. And my sneaky thing that I did, I always say I kind of Eve Harringtoned my way into the cast.
That's true.
I started writing Little Too Much Light plays and I gave them to Lisa. And she would take them into rehearsal and pitch them, and a few of my pieces got into the show over the course of 1989. So I am the only neo-futurist who actually
wrote
for the show before I was
in it.
And that gave me a little leg up when it came
to
audition.
Rachel, do you remember? I mean, you must, but do you remember your audition about the experience of trying to get into
this
cast?
I do. I mean, I was kind of a groupie before I came in, and I had done a workshop. I had done a Too Much Light workshop. So I transitioned straight out of the workshop into the audition because they just happened to be at the same sort of time. I was 23. I had just moved to Chicago. And like Dave, I came here to do a very different thing. I came to be an actress with a capital A, right? So I auditioned for the big guns. My first job was at the Goodman, and it was all well and good, but there was something missing for me. I had been a writer before I was a performer, and I felt like I don't want to read other people's words. I don't want to be told that I'm not this or not that enough to be on stage. Mm-hmm. That's insane. I have this tool that I want to use, and I want my voice to be heard, and I want it to be heard in a way that, you know, is powerful and my own. I had and to see that show and say, you know, have that same experience. Oh my God, I could have agency here. And it was, and it, like Dave, it was this incredible mix of people speaking their truths unapologetically with incredible risk. And that just was, I was hooked.
And what's wonderful is that the folks who are active now are really, really good at teaching a lot of workshops to give even more and more people opportunity. And rather than just seeing the show and hoping that you can audition,
there's a process.
There's a process involved that they've been sharing for years now, and just creating so many more opportunities for people to become their own sort of artists in the city. And it's
I've taught a lot of those workshops, and I can say every time that the look on someone's face when they realize that they can write a monologue or a piece and perform it and be heard is really
That's
intense.
Awesome, yeah.
And it can be anyone. It doesn't have to be an actor. It doesn't have to be a performer.
And also, it's nice in the neo-futurist format. You don't have to split your being. Like, if you're going to be a
That's
comedian,
right.
there's the pressure to always get a laugh. If you're going to be a poet, that's something different. In the neo-futurist world, you can be funny, or you can be poetic, or you can be angry, or you get the full range of emotions. And whatever's on your mind that week, you can present there's a place for it in the show.
And there's something really great about the ability in an ensemble to write as sort of as fast as you are with little sort of collaborative editing, meaning, you know, I've worked in sessions where there's six or seven people and you want to put something together and a lot of people moving stuff here and moving stuff there. And the next thing you know, it's not what you wanted to say. There's something about the neo-futurists and Too Much Light because of the time that it takes to put this stuff on that you're like, Phil, whatever you got to say, say it.
On Tuesday nights after we select the plays and you get up on your feet, the author is
the director
of that piece. Yeah. And there's a lot of respect for this is your vision. I'm going to help you present it as clearly as we can, but it's your vision and it's your hands, and run with it.
Phil, yeah, I got to ask you, as one of the original, I mean, we're talking about Stage Left, we're talking about that Belmont and Clark,
Live Bait, yeah.
Just that sort of counterculture time in the late 80s when you had a Voltaire and other places right. that
Dunkin'
were
Donuts.
Doing right. those, yeah, they were doing that kind of stuff right there. I mean, that there was something special about what you guys were trying to put together.
Well, you know, it was, I mean, look, in the same way that the people in the show now are responding to things that are happening in, you know, in the world and the politics and the election we talk about, that's all we were doing, right? We were responding to exactly what was going on. And it's so wonderful to see how the plays have changed. The feeling has remained the same and the approach has remained the same, but the content and what's being said and how it's being said continues to change. But, you know, you got to remember, right around the corner, like Annoyance opened up around the corner. Mm-hmm. And like I said, at that time, 10:30, theaters like, good night. They shut their doors and that was it.
The city did.
Yeah, right. The idea of like coming to theater at 11:30 at night.
There was this wonderful fringe scene that blossomed in Chicago in the late 80s, early 90s. Theater Oobleck are big, you know, contemporaries of ours. Also,
Curious.
Cardiff Giant, yeah. Where Greg Kotis came to us from.
And Scott.
All of these wonderful groups. And I always say it's because in those days, space was so cheap in Chicago. You could, above and beyond theater spaces, you could go to these different like bars and saloons and just say, hey, you know, can we have an idea for a show. Can we do it here? And we'll give you a cut of the door. Or they'd say, don't even worry if you bring in enough people and they order.
Right.
So whatever crazy vision you had for theater, you could find a space to do it.
Yeah.
And all of this wonderful stuff that came out of Chicago in the 90s, I think came from that.
Do you think it's harder to do that now in 2016?
Oh yeah, it's so much more expensive to
find
a
space.
It's
still possible though when you compare it to other cities. I think that's
yes.
But you're right.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are fine. Listen, you know, it may not be smack dab in the middle of Lakeview, but there's stuff going on in Pilsen and the South Side and the South Loop that's exciting, and people are finding they're making their own opportunities.
Right.
Phil Ritterelli, Dave All, Rachel Claff in studio. We're talking about Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind, which is wrapping up the longest run in Chicago history, late night run in Chicago history, on December 31st. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk some more. Stay with us.
Here we go.
Neo-Futurists, Phil Ritterelli, Dave All, Rachel Claff in studio. We're talking about Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind. You know, as we wrap up here, we only have about, you know, 10 minutes left. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask for you guys to perform something. You guys have come with some of the books and scripts. I feel like it's Tuesday night at the the old Nietzsche.
Pitching our play.
I should point out, too, that as of the closing, they will have done 9,775 plays.
Ooh, so close.
And some of these plays, and one of the things that's great about it, some of these plays could be 5 to 10 minutes long. Others are 5 seconds.
No, 10 minutes.
You get
in trouble.
How dare you?
5 or 6, though.
Four minutes, I think, is as long as you're allowed to go before.
I think you guys should have pushed it, gone for like a 20-minute.
If you've been in the show for 27 years, they're like, we'll let Phil do his 3-minute play.
Fine.
Great,
all right,
Phil.
All right, what are we going to hear here?
We're going to do a play from 1994, and I'll set that. We were talking a little about issues in the show. For me, as a gay person, one of the cool things about Too Much Light, it was still in those days pretty rare to have openly gay performers. I mean, this was before Ellen came out. And Too Much Light was a show where I could be openly gay on stage and supported by my straight compatriots. I wanted to make it my issue to kind of out myself in every show because I wanted everyone who came into the theater to kind of feel like they'd met a gay person if they didn't have any gay friends. And I wanted the high school kids who were gay and thinking about coming out to have seen a gay person performing with their supportive straight friends. And so this is one of those plays. This is from 1994. This is called, well, Phil's gonna call.
Shall we begin? All right.
Yeah.
Theater chat, go.
Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Rachel.
And this is Theater Chat.
Welcome to Theater Chat for December 8th, 2016.
Today our topic is one that I personally find fascinating because it's very close to my own heart. We're going to be talking about heterosexuals in the theater.
Oh my God, there are a lot of heterosexuals in the theater, aren't there?
You can't hardly walk into a dressing room without tripping over one of them. You know, Rachel, Over my many years in the theater, I have made dozens of wonderful heterosexual friends. It was in the theater that I first encountered heterosexuals.
Oh my God, I know. My college theater department was full of them. And, you know, I was a little uncomfortable around them at first until I came to see how really charming they can be.
Definitely.
I mean, regardless of what you think of their lifestyle, you can't deny that they tend to be very talented people and often very witty.
Oh, they're awfully entertaining. I mean, I wouldn't want to go to a party where there wasn't at least one of them
holding court the way they do.
Oh, I know. I mean, it seems like they can all sing or dance or do impressions or something.
And they don't all try to hit on you.
No, most of them are very polite. You just say no, and they usually respect that.
Well, anyway, we're talking about heterosexuals in the theater.
Right. And first off, we should probably point out that there have been many great playwrights who were, in fact, heterosexual.
Right.
Like, for instance...
Like, for instance...
Neil Simon.
Oh, of course, Neil Simon. And you know, you can really get a sense from reading his plays that he's a heterosexual, too.
Well, it does tend to creep into their work, doesn't it?
Certainly. Just look at Barefoot in the Park. There was that relationship between, Carrie or Laurie or whatever, and that man.
Robert Redford.
Oh, right, Robert Redford.
Oh, and what about the Star-Spangled Girl?
I mean, gosh, the title gives it away right there, doesn't it?
Wait, what's that? Really? Oh, ladies and gentlemen, I have something really exciting to announce. For the first time in the history of Theater Chat, we seem to have gotten a telephone call. Well, actually, it's just Phil pretending to be a telephone call, but still, it's very exciting.
Hello, caller.
Hi, yeah, I'm just calling in to say that I am sick and tired of hearing about heterosexuals. I turn on the TV, I turn on the radio, it's all you hear about. I mean, what if a child heard this show?
Well, now.
And another thing, I don't think you'd keep harping on the subject all the time if you weren't harboring some heterosexual feelings of your own. Admit it, Dave, I bet you're secretly heterosexual yourself, aren't you?
Well, that's the first time I've ever been accused of that. But for the record, neither Rachel nor I... Rachel? Rachel?
Oh my God, Dave, help me.
Oh, Rachel, have you been having some heterosexual feelings?
I'm just so confused.
Oh, honey, really, it's no big deal. Listen, there are special neighborhoods where you can live and nobody will even notice. Like Schaumburg.
Oh.
Hey, let's talk about this some more later, okay?
Okay.
Well, that's all for this theater chat. So till next time, remember, be careful what you say, because heterosexuals really are everywhere. Good night.
Curtain. There you are.
Dave Hall, Rachel Claff, and Phil Ritterelli from the Neo-Futurist, Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind. The big news this week that the show is wrapping up December 31st over a licensing drama.
And then being reborn.
And then regenerating, as you said.
Yes.
Let me ask, I mean, what is next? I mean, the theater has to be prepared for this, obviously, and they're ready. They're not, the Neo-Futurists are not closing. They're not folding. They've already came out and said, we've got other programming. Yep, what's next for the company?
Well, there's going to be a new iteration of this performance, Fridays and Saturdays at 11:30, Sundays at 7, that'll be starting up in January, and they're working hard on it right now. And they've had some things in the work for a while that people should be looking forward to. There is a show that they've been running for a year and a half now called The Arrow, which is a different sort of iteration of storytelling. It's like it's storytelling supported by an ensemble. The ensemble keeps changing. It's really, really exciting. In fact, I don't know if I've had a chance to talk to you guys about this, but it truly reminds me of what the first few months of Too Much Light was.
Oh.
It was spontaneous. It was people who were intimate with each other's experience and story and different methods of storytelling. And there's a workshop coming up. I'm going to get this. Next Wednesday on the 14th for a show they're doing called Tangles and Plaques about death.
Let
and
me
memory.
Ask you this as we wrap up. I mean, I don't think it's possible for anyone who's listening right now to see the final shows of Too Much Like
Us. No, they're sold out.
They're all sold out,
well,
right?
They have it. So there are advanced ticket sales online. But they only sell part of the audience, so you can still get in line early for the best of shows.
I will match anyone out there if they want to stand in line together.
And then are we allowed to tease this on January 1st?
We're only allowed to hint it.
You can hint at it.
You did not just say that date because we're not allowed to hint at the date.
No,
so
hint,
everyone,
take
a pill and forget you just heard that date. But imagine for a minute that all these wonderfully talented people we were talking about who've been in Too Much Light over the years, not all of them, but if a lot of them decided they wanted to make a show of force statement in favor of the neo-futurist Chicago company, what if they all came together and did something?
Yeah. Huh. We'll see.
Hogwash. I don't think it can be done.
Pipe dream.
You know, the last question for you guys, just quickly as we wrap up before the news, you guys were a part of an institution and a show that broke records here in town. Mm-hmm. It also had a huge impact on the people who saw it, from high school kids to people who continue to stand in line today. What's it mean to you to be a part of this show?
Oh, everything. I mean, it's a huge part of my life. Decades, 28 years, half my life. Incredibly proud to be a part of it, and to have met and worked with so many of those people throughout those decades. It's almost every opportunity I've had in the arts has come out of that show.
Rachel?
For me, it's two things. I mean, when I joined at age 23, so I can safely say that being in the company shaped the artist that I am today, taught me how to write better, how to perform better, how to be a better woman, actually. I had mentor after mentor there, and it also gave me the best friends of my life. I mean, some of them, you know, have married each other and had children. So, you know, this is family. And the other thing for me is that it truly taught me how to fail and not be afraid of failing, because you get up there on Friday and if something goes badly, you're on to the next play. As Scott Herms, one of our alumni, said, if we suck, we suck short. You just go on to the next thing and you learn not to take it seriously.
All right. Yeah. Final word, Dave.
It really was the 10 best years of my creative life, because you get to experiment and just try so many things. And the quality of the artists that I got to collaborate with, I feel like I just lucked into this incredible experience. And everyone who stumbles into our theater probably feels like they lucked into something. Mm-hmm.
Chicago theater legends, Phil Ritterelli, Dave Hall, Rachel Claff, Too Much Light Makes
a
Baby Go Line.
See you in January as a Neo.
Yeah,
that's right. There you go. Good to see you guys.